This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Plato here at Notre Dame's DiBartolo Performing Arts Center in South Bend, Indiana. Last year, Americans bought 96,000 plug-in electric cars. You buy anybody buy a plug-in electric car? Yeah? That's nearly twice as many as was sold the year before. And even so, those 96,000 cars make up only about 0.5% of all the cars sold in the U.S. in 2013. Will electrics ever be able to edge out their gas-powered competitors? Well, there is precedent for this. This battle of gas versus electric is not new. Right here in South Bend, Indiana, Studebaker Motors manufactured many variations of electric cars over 100 years ago. And one of them, One of them even got 40 miles per charge, just like the Volt does today. So 100 years, we've gotten to the same 40. back then, electrics could have been a contender, but gas won out. What happened? Well, we have a great storyteller to tell us about that. Andy Beckman is the archivist at the Studebaker National Museum here in South Bend. Welcome to Science Friday, Andy.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's turn the clock back to the 1800s. Talk about what was going on at Studebaker. They were making carriage horses first, right?
They were the world's largest manufacturer of wagons and buggies, the world's largest transportation manufacturer that got their start as two men in a blacksmith shop. And they grew to build just about anything that could be pulled behind a horse to carry people or goods one place or another. And by the turn of the last century, the company is starting to look at this newfangled self-propelled automobile type thing. The discussions around the boardroom, you wish you could be a fly on the wall there, but we can kind of gather that the older generation, which included some of the company founders, and they were a family-held company at this time, were saying, no, the horse and buggy is just fine. We're selling them left and right. You know, there's no need to go into this newfangled, you know, fly-by-night thing called the automobile. Who knows if that's going to stick? Remember the bicycle craze in the 1890s?
Right.
Yeah. A lot of people lost their shirts.
But they did get into building electric cars.
Yeah,
Why not gas cars? Why electric cars?
Well, it was the younger generation that really pushed them into automobiles, but you still had to contend with those pesky guys whose name are on the side of the building, like John M. Studebaker. He did not like gasoline-powered cars. He said gasoline-powered cars are clumsy, dangerous, noisy brutes that stink to high heaven and break down at the worst possible moment.
Very prophetic.
And really, who could argue with him at that time? The gasoline-powered car was in its infancy. They were difficult to operate. He was right. They smelled bad. Gasoline, when it burns with no emission equipment of any kind, gives off some rather noxious fumes. You needed a highly trained chauffeur to operate it. Even starting a gasoline-powered car was occasionally a fatal task. There were people actually killed trying to crank start a car, backfired, knock him in the head, and it was just a terrible tragedy. And that happened on a number of occasions. Electrics, on the other hand, you could hop in, flip a switch, pick your speed, off you went.
So what kind of technology did they use? Just the batteries of the time and an electric motor?
Well, yeah, and that was another appeal of the electrics. The electric motor was around. You could order them up from Westinghouse. The batteries were readily available from a number of suppliers. Studebaker used Exide batteries. They were already building coachwork for their horse-drawn vehicles, so it was just a matter of adapting a chassis to an electric vehicle, and there you go.
So Thomas Edison wasn't building batteries?
I think he was lending his name to whoever was building the batteries, but you could get some Edison-branded batteries as well at that time.
But he did buy a car?
He bought, now the Studebaker Press clippings say the second Studebaker electric ever built was owned by Thomas Edison. And in fact, his son wrote to the company in the 1920s, I guess the press department wanted to verify that, and he said, yes, indeed, he had that thing, he drove the wheels off of it until it went to its own demise in the early 1920s.
You would have thought that he would want to build his own if he's into electricity and he loved the car so much.
You would think. That's a very good point. And that also wasn't the only electric automobile he ever used. I wonder if he was just kind of seeing, you know, look what they're doing with my invention.
I have an idea. Maybe it's because there was a Westinghouse motor in it.
That could very well be. You wonder if they taped that over.
Because, you know, the war between him and Westinghouse
indeed
went on for a long time. They also made electric trucks, right? Not just the cars.
Indeed. They made any number of electric commercial vehicles anywhere from 2,500 to 10,000-pound capacity. Those were not as successful as the automobiles. We're talking about their total production run from 1902 to 1911 was just under 1,900 vehicles. But if you do the math on the power output of the engines, you had a truck trying to carry 5,000 pounds that put out 4.3 horsepower.
4.3 horsepower.
No overnight deliveries that day.
But once you got it moving, it could go.
Yeah, pray for flat country, that's for certain. But again, compared to what they were using, which was the horse-drawn vehicle, I mean, gosh, the electrics must have been great. The Gimbel's company out of New York ordered a whole fleet of Studebaker electrics. You know, you didn't have to feed the electric when it wasn't working. You didn't have the horse exhaust to contend with. You didn't have...
the horse exhaust. I've never heard it described that way. I'm going to use that.
Just really, it was the next best thing they had, and the gasoline-powered vehicles were just not up to that level at that time.
You know, but today, if you get a Tesla or a Volt or any of the other electric cars, you have to plug it in and charge overnight. I mean, the electrical structure of the U.S. was not set up for any sort of moving around very far and charging like that, was it?
Well, it's interesting you mention that, because with the purchase of every automobile, they did include a 15-foot cord to charge it with. Now, what that cord was supposed to attach to, that was another level of technology. You could actually buy a rectifier for your house, this big apparatus that you had to plug in. They paid a lot of attention to instructing people how to charge your electric automobile. They even mentioned that at power plants, which apparently they would just let you drive up and plug into if you knew what to ask for, they gave instructions as to what to do with, because, you know, they're generating alternating current. The electric car is running off of direct current. That's not going to work too well. Well, you plug it into this thing and make this switch and tell them you want this, and you can charge your electric car there. It was really an entertaining read researching for today.
Did they charge you extra for the charging unit?
Oh, of course they did. You also could pay extra for a convertible top, too. But yeah, the charging machine, it was. They even showed how convenient it was. Even if you didn't have a garage in which to put this thing in, they showed a brownstone in an urban area where they showed the charging station tucked under the stairs out front, running extension cord across the sidewalk where your Studebaker Electric would just recharge while you let it sit there, I'm certain, unattended, with no harm falling to it.
So how many cars did they make, and how many people bought them, and how many years?
1902 to 1911, they produced, I think it was 1,811 electric vehicles of all kinds.
They sell every one they made?
Probably more made every one they could sell, I have a feeling. But, you know, those numbers are paltry by comparison. Yeah. But even compared to the early gasoline-powered models that they were offering, which came along 2 years later, it was encouraging. You can see why they still weren't ready to abandon the electric market.
And so what happened that they finally had to go gas?
Well, a couple of things. The development of the gasoline engine was just going leaps and bounds, and you know, it was becoming much more reliable. Gasoline was becoming more available. In the early days, you didn't have the Phillips station with everything pay at the pump. It was you had to find a place. Many outlying areas didn't have gasoline available. But really, it was the development of like the self-starter. Now, you didn't have to get out and crank the car. You could start it yourself. Cars came down in price. When Studebaker first introduced their gasoline-powered cars, they cost twice as much as the electrics. By the time towards the end of the production run, it was the other way around. The gasoline-powered cars were half as much as the electrics. And it was clear, at least to the Studebaker Corporation, that the gasoline-powered car was the way to go.
Did Studebaker have any competitors in making electric cars?
They did, actually. There was they weren't the first electric. There was the Baker Electric Company out of Ohio, and they actually started making electrics in 1899. And actually, there was another company, the Detroit Electric. They actually made electric automobiles up into the 1930s. So there was like one stalwart still hanging on there.
Are there any of them still around?
There are a couple. I believe the Henry Ford Museum may have a Detroit.
They have a Studebaker in the Ford Museum.
And, well, they should. There's a few of those hanging around. The nice thing was the electrics... From a collector's standpoint, it's very easy to operate an electric. It can sit for a lot of years. You throw in a battery and pump up the tires, and you're probably good to go. Gasoline-powered cars don't age as gracefully technology-wise with the fuels and fluids, but, yeah, electrics still...
Is it surprising to you that they were getting 40 miles on a charge, and that's still what we're getting?
I was surprised to learn that. The electric cars and Studebakers age weight about 600-700 pounds. You know, a Chevy Volt, they didn't have to deal with, airbags and other pesky things. Of course, the Volt has safety glass, so we'll consider that a fair trade.
Mm-hmm. So they finally disappeared from the landscape, never to be seen again.
Well, it's like they kept surfacing up every now and again.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. American Motors was experimenting with electric vehicle in the 70s, or these little commuter car in the 1970s. You know, it's amazing when gasoline starts spiking up again, suddenly everyone's going, you know, maybe it's time to look at this whole electric thing again. And now, you know, it looks like the big three has really embraced electricity as a viable alternative, one kind or another.
When was the last Studebaker, the regular car?
Last Studebaker was...
I remember when I was a child seeing that, especially the Bullitt one, the Bullitt car.
Oh, yeah, that was their best seller. Last Studebaker was actually built St. Paddy's Day, 1966, March 17th.
And some of them still around?
We have the last one down at the Studebaker National Museum. You can come down and see it. I'll give you a personal tour.
Thank you, Andy. And your museum is open. So everybody can come down and see that last.
Check us out at studebakermuseum.org. Open Monday through Saturday, 10 to 5, noon to 5 on Sundays.
There you got something to do. Thank you. Thank you, Andy. Andy Beckman is the archivist at the Studebaker National Museum here in South Bend. Thanks for joining us today. When we come back, the clues at a crime scene that might crawl away from you, we'll talk with a forensic entomologist. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International.